I'll be honest with you, Maria, it's going to be a delicate dance. And a lot of it is going to depend on how the Chinese respond. Mm. If they respond in a highly aggressive manner, I guarantee you the President of the United States has far more cards than the People's Republic of China. If, however, they're willing to be reasonable, then Donald Trump is always willing to be a reasonable negotiator. We're going to find out a lot in the weeks to come about whether China wants to start a trade war with us or whether they actually want to be reasonable. I hope they choose the path of reason. The President of the United States is going to defend America regardless.
This is my video update on this Sunday afternoon, late afternoon. October the 12th, coming to you from Yerevan. Let's talk about some news. And let's start things off with a quick update on a border clash that is happening between Pakistan and Afghanistan. And each side is saying that the other side started it. Pakistan is saying that Afghanistan fired on their border guards first, and Afghanistan is saying that Pakistan fired on them first. And each side is claiming that they have made territorial gains. This border clash continues. And that is the update on what is happening between Pakistan and Afghanistan. I'm not even quite sure why this is happening, and each side is blaming the other for starting it. But I wonder if this has anything to do with Bagram, if this has anything to do with the United States getting Pakistan to cause some trouble, or maybe this has to do with Afghanistan trying to cause Pakistan some trouble. Not quite sure how all of this started, but there you are. We have another conflict, kind of, a border conflict. Maybe this is about Trump solving his 9th or 10th conflict, mediating his 9th or 10th peace deal. Maybe that's what this is about. Maybe Trump told Pakistan and Afghanistan, look, I want you guys to start fighting on the border, and then I'm going to come along and I'll mediate a peace, right? He's making his bid, his preparations for the 2026 Nobel Peace Prize. Just joking. I don't think so. But anyway, it continues, and we'll be monitoring this situation. Speaking of Trump, can I cross? Yeah, I think I can cross. He had a phone call with Zelensky yesterday, according to Axios, and the call was all about Tomahawks, the Tomahawk long-range missiles. Zelensky wants the missile. Trump is still undecided, but they talked about the Tomahawks in detail, according to Axios. And both sides, the United States and Ukraine, they're seriously considering the Tomahawks in Ukraine to be used to launch long-range missile strikes deep into Russia. And they're just working out the details as to how this is going to happen, if it does happen, if Trump does decide to give the okay. There is some analysis. Brian Berletic shared an article from 2023, I believe, was when this article was published. And it's some military analysts talking about how the United States military was testing out a new mobile launch platform, much smaller than the big Typhoon platform. And they were testing it out. This is back in 2023 to see if it could be something that Ukraine could use in the conflict against Russia, specifically to fire Tomahawks into the Russian Federation. But you know what? What happened is that Biden was dead set against Tomahawks to Ukraine. And so it just kind of stayed there, this new smaller, more mobile ground launch platform for the Tomahawks. And there hasn't been any reporting about this system since that time. So maybe this thing is ready. Who knows? Maybe they are going to want to test it out in Ukraine against Russia. But one thing's for sure. The fact that the Trump administration and the Zelensky regime are talking so much about Tomahawk long-range missiles and just long-range missiles in general, and they're having conversations about this almost every other day, and both militaries are discussing this in detail, means that the long-range missiles are going to Ukraine, whether they're Tomahawks or Taurus or Barracudas or JSAMs or whatever. The long-range missiles are going to Ukraine, or they're already in Ukraine, and they will be fired into the Russian Federation. So that's my thinking on this. And the Financial Times, they have an article. Interesting. Talking about how the Trump administration, since July this summer, the Trump administration has been working very closely with Ukraine to provide targeting, satellites, intelligence, everything with drone and missile strikes into Russia to destroy Russia's energy facilities. And according to the Financial Times, the Trump White House, they believe that if they can destroy enough of Russia's energy infrastructure, then it will hurt Putin's economy and ultimately his war machine, and then it will force Putin to come to the negotiating table and capitulate. This is what the Financial Times is reporting, according to officials that they have interviewed. And not only, according to the Financial Times, not only has the Trump administration been providing all of the satellite and the intel and everything like that, so that drones and missiles, not only missiles, drones and missiles can hit Russia's energy facilities. According to some of the officials interviewed by the FT, the Trump administration, they have actually been picking targets as well. They've actually been picking the targets deep inside of Russia to hit. I mean, we're talking about the United States. In essence, it's the United States attacking Russia, not only with missiles, HIMARS and whatever. It's the United States attacking Russia with drones. They're basically doing everything, picking the targets, all of the satellites, all of the intel, everything. They're doing everything to hit Russia's energy infrastructure. And this is what the Financial Times is reporting, if you believe the reporting from the FT. The U.S. has for months been helping Ukraine mount long-range strikes on Russian energy facilities, and what officials say is a coordinated effort to weaken Vladimir Putin's economy and force him to the negotiating table. Three people familiar with the operation said Washington was closely involved in all stages of planning. A U.S. official said Ukraine selected the targets for long-range strikes, and Washington then provided intelligence on the site's vulnerabilities. But others involved and briefed on the operation said the U.S. had also set out targeting priorities for the Ukrainians. One of them described Kiev's drone force as the instrument for Washington to undermine Russia's economy and push Putin towards a settlement. And just yesterday, Putin was asked about Trump and him not getting the Nobel Peace Prize. And Putin's response was that Trump genuinely wants peace. He is absolutely working for peace. And the example that Putin used to make the case that Trump is working for peace is the Middle East and Ukraine. He said that Trump genuinely wants peace in the Middle East and Ukraine. That is what the Russian president said yesterday. And this morning, you get the Financial Times article, which talks about how the Trump administration is escalating big time against Russia. Actually, the Financial Times article even goes on to say that that the Trump administration has crossed and is ready to cross red lines that the Biden administration never considered. We're talking red lines that Biden never would have crossed, that Biden said no to, such as the Tomahawk long-range missiles. And the Trump administration is ready to cross those red lines in order to escalate with Russia. That is what the Financial Times is saying. So, you know, reports like this from Collective West Media, whether this is to be believed or not, just the fact that they put out articles like this and they cite the anonymous officials familiar with the matter as they put together these articles, it doesn't make Russia look good, right? It absolutely sabotages the negotiations, if there are negotiations that are still taking place between the United States and Russia, right? If you can call what's taking place between the United States and Russia negotiations anymore. But that absolutely sabotages those negotiations, and it doesn't reflect well on the statements that Putin makes. You know, Putin is constantly complimenting Trump and saying Trump is a man of peace and he's rational and he's pragmatic and we can talk with him. And then the Collective West Media and the Financial Times, they come out with an article talking about how Trump wants to smash Russia, and he wants to do more harm to Russia than Biden ever thought of doing. Anyway, that is what the Financial Times reported. There's absolutely truth to this article. At least in my opinion, there's truth to this article, whether it's completely true, part true. We all know that the United States is, at a minimum, at a very minimum, they are providing a lot of intel and targeting and satellite stuff to Ukraine to fire missiles into the Russian Federation. That's at a minimum. We know that. Whether they're actually picking the targets, that's an interesting revelation from the FT. So Alensky, he's complaining a whole lot about how he's not getting enough weapons to go after Russia. He wants the U.S. taxpayer to provide 10 times more weapons and money and everything else that they're currently providing. So Alensky is complaining to the United States taxpayer, give me more money, give me more weapons. And he's also complaining about the fact that the Trump administration is focusing more on the Middle East than on Project Ukraine, and he's upset about that. Though when he did call Trump, he congratulated Trump on the 20-point peace plan, and he said, "If you, President Trump, can get peace in the Middle East, then you can surely solve the conflict in Ukraine." That is what Axios is reporting. Alensky told Trump when they spoke right before they got into the Tomahawk discussion. But yeah, he's complaining the Middle East is taking up too much time from the Trump administration and too much attention, and he wants more money and more weapons from U.S. taxpayers. So if you're watching this from the United States, Alensky is telling you to give him more money and give him more weapons. That is what Alensky is demanding of you if you are a U.S. taxpayer. So speaking of money going to Project Ukraine, the E3 came out with a statement yesterday, and they said that they are united in giving the Russian frozen assets to Project Ukraine. Committed and united, the E3. The E3 is the UK, Stammer, Germany Merz, and France's little Napoleon, Emmanuel Macron. And they've agreed that the Russian assets will be going to Ukraine. We agreed to develop further bold and innovative mechanisms to increase the cost of Russia's war and ramp up pressure, the British government said in a statement. So they've made a pact. Stammer, Merz, and Macron. They made a pact. They pinky sweared, or what would they do? What would Macron, Stammer, and Merz do if they make a pact, as they make a pact to hand over the Russian frozen assets to Project Ukraine? How do they seal that deal? Do they use cocktail stirrers or napkins, white napkins? Is that how they sealed the deal in their three-way pact? Stammer, Merz, and Macron. Oh, man, we are getting reports from the European finance ministers that they are right there, that close to finalizing the 140 billion or 180 billion from the Russian frozen assets to go to Project Ukraine. They're that close, and the mechanism that they're going to use, according to various reports, is that they're going to give the assets as a reparations loan to Project Ukraine. And Ukraine is going to pay back this loan only when Russia pays Ukraine reparations. That's how this is going to work. So it's going to be a loan. The money is going to be the Russian frozen assets. That's the cash. They're going to take the Russian frozen assets, give them to Ukraine. Europe is going to say, we're loaning you this money, which is not our money. This is Russia's money, but we're loaning it to you, Ukraine. And you pay us back when Russia pays you back for reparations. That's how this thing works. And if Russia does not pay back the reparations, according to the reports, then the money does not need to be paid back. You know what the EU is betting on? They're betting on the fact that Russia's not going to go after these funds. That's what they're betting on, because everyone knows that Russia's not going to pay reparations. When does the victor of a conflict actually pay reparations or anything like that? It doesn't make any sense. But yeah, they're betting on the fact that they're going to give this money to Project Ukraine, and that Putin's just going to say, forget about it. That is exactly what they are betting on. This is just outright theft, man. That's what this is. We're just going to take the cash that's Russia's. We're going to give it to Ukraine in the form of a loan. And if Russia decides to give the money to Ukraine, to pay Ukraine, then we're all good, right? Loaning other people's money. But yeah, that's what they're betting on. They're betting on Putin just forgetting about it. I wouldn't take that bet, but who knows? Who knows? Maybe Putin just does say, you know what? Forget about the 140 billion or the 180 billion. It's possible, man, I guess. I don't know on what planet that's going to happen, but, you know, that's what the EU is hoping for, the European leaders. So the Washington Post, they put out an exclusive article yesterday, which talked about how Arab states have been working with Israel from 2022 all the way up to 2025, up until the day that Israel attacked Qatar. Arab states have been working with Israel in order to build some sort of unified military alliance or military system. And it's all being focused on taking on Iran in the future. And so from 2022, the Arab states of, this is all according to the Washington Post, the states of Bahrain, Egypt, Jordan, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and the UAE through the U.S. Central Command's regional security construct were in a cooperation, a military cooperation with Israel in order to build some sort of military axis to take on Iran. The title of this Washington Post article is Arab States Expanded Cooperation with Israel with Israeli Military During Gaza War Files Show. Israeli and Arab military officials have come together for meetings and trainings facilitated by U.S. Central Command on regional threats, Iran, and underground tunnels. The Washington Post says that the group met from 2022 to 2025 for joint drills on air defense, tunnel warfare, and countering Iran's influence. Meetings took place in places like Bahrain, Egypt, and even Qatari's Al Udeid Air Base, where Israeli officers were flown in quietly to avoid public outrage. Documents describe Iran and its proxies as the axis of evil and show efforts to link Arab and Israeli radar systems into a shared U.S.-run network. The cooperation survived until Israel's September 9 airstrike on Qatar, which nearly collapsed the alliance. Until the Qatar prime minister, was it? Went to the United States, a high-level Qatar official went to the United States and, Netanyahu was in the United States and he phoned up the Qatari government and, according to reports, apologized to Qatar for the airstrikes on September the 9th. And it looks like this alliance between these Middle East nations and Israel, these Arab states and Israel, is now back on. And it's all about countering Iran. That's what it's really all about. They talk about tunnel warfare and sicking up their military systems and radar systems and stuff like that, and air defenses and all these things. But really, when you read the article, it's all about getting everyone on the same page for a war with Iran. An amazing article from the Washington Post. It makes me wonder why they're reporting this. That's the question that I have. Why is the Washington Post running this exclusive? I don't get it. What do you guys think? Why would they run this article? The Iranian foreign minister, Araghchi, he said that three or four nights ago, this is a direct quote from Araghchi, he said three or four nights ago, there was a phone call between Putin and Netanyahu. The next day, our ambassador in Moscow was summoned, and Russia conveyed Netanyahu's message that he does not intend to start another war with our country. Iran's armed forces are at high alert because there is a high possibility of deception by Israel, and we do not trust these intentions. That is what he said in connection to the statement that Putin made yesterday or 2 days ago about Netanyahu and Israel telling Russia that they don't want escalation. And Araghchi is now saying that this is indeed a true statement from the Russian president, as confirmed by Iran's ambassador to Moscow and what they told him. But Iran is not buying it, man. They don't buy it. They think this is some sort of trick. So what else should we talk about? How about the crypto meltdown from yesterday? A historic meltdown in crypto and altcoins, Ethereum, and all of these crypto investments. Bitcoin crashed, but was more stable than the altcoins. There was a crypto investor, a crypto trader, a well-known crypto trader from Kiev called Konstantin Ganich, also known as Gostia Kudo, who looks like he self-deleted in his Lamborghini. And the police in Kiev say that he self-deleted according to their initial investigation. Maybe something else might have happened. But he was investing a lot in altcoins, and he lost a lot of money from yesterday's meltdown in the market. But he was also handling investments for wealthy Ukrainian oligarchs. But more importantly, he was handling a lot of crypto investments for the intel services in Ukraine and for intel officials in Ukraine. And they even say, this is just a rumor, they even say that this guy, Gostyakudo, Konstantin Ganish, that he was even handling some of the investments of none other than Android AI robot Budanov. And he was found dead in his Lamborghini. He was managing $65 million, including $10 million from Ukraine's GUR, according to local media. And he was under a lot of pressure from security forces to share his crypto portfolio. And I imagine when the meltdown happened, he was probably under an immense amount of pressure, and God knows what else. Anyway, that's an interesting story, and yeah, a lot of people, man, got absolutely wrecked in the markets, the crypto markets, the altcoins from yesterday. We'll see what happens tomorrow when the markets open, how things are going to look. Anyway, should we do a drone update, an EU drone panic update? EU drone panic update, EU drone panic update. Anyway, that's my jingle for the weekly segment. It's not a daily segment, but let's just say a weekly segment for the EU drone panic. And German Airlines, they are calling on Germany, the German military, to shoot down drones that are over the airport. This is what the German airlines are telling. Let's go this way. This is what they're telling the German military to do. Shoot down the drones over the airport. Drones should not be flying over the airport to begin with. But, man, the German military, from what I understand, they have some trouble shooting down the drones because of some stuff from the times of the Mustache Man, and they can't use their military in that kind of way. But they're trying to figure it out. But that's what the airlines are saying in Germany. And the EU's war commissioner, Andrius Kubilis, he said in a speech yesterday that all of Europe is under threat. Russian drones can strike Belgium, Netherlands, France, and more from ships. Drones can target all coasts of Europe. All member states need capabilities to detect drones. This is the statement from the EU's Commissioner of War. That's right, the European Union has a Commissioner of War, a defense commissioner, because NATO is not enough. They need this guy to manage the EU's War Department. And it was just going to be an economic union with freedom of movement and labor, travel, Schengen. That's all it was going to be. Now they've got a whole war department. Yep. Anyway, that is what he said. And let's do some clown worlds and we can wrap up today's video. And boy, these clown worlds are good. These are some good clown worlds. We got music going on in this direction, so let's walk up there. So what's his name, Stoltenberg, his memoirs are coming out, or they've already been released, and one of the excerpts from his memoirs talks about how Biden was calling Zelensky a pain in the arse. That's right. Pain in the butt. Pain in the ass is what Stoltenberg said in his memoirs. That's what Biden called Zelensky. Telling you, man, it seems like Biden was much tougher on Zelensky than Trump is. That's the way it looks, man. If you go off of the Financial Times article, And you go off of Trump's escalation and Trump's willingness to cross all kinds of red lines in order to please Zelensky. And you go off of the fact that Biden was saying no to tomahawks. And Biden actually did have some red lines that he was not willing to cross. And now you have this statement from Stoltenberg's memoirs talking about how Biden did not like Zelensky. And Biden was tough on Zelensky, man. Much tougher than Trump. Jeez, man. Upside down world. Anyway, the showcase clown world for today is coming from the Daily Mail. I kissed Trudeau and I liked it. Eye-popping pictures prove Katy Perry and Justin Trudeau are a couple. Friends spill on the romance. And the Daily Mail has photos of Trudeau and Katy Perry on Katy Perry's 24-meter yacht off the Californian coast. And they're hugging and they're kissing a shirtless Trudeau and Katy Perry in her swimsuit. And in one of the photos, Trudeau is grabbing some arse. Since we're talking about a pain in the ass, well, Trudeau is grabbing Katy Perry's butt in one of the photos. Justin, you dirty dog, Justin Trudeau. Yeah. Looks like Trudeau has a tattoo, huh? Is that a tattoo on his shoulder? Anyway. So yeah, Justin Trudeau and Katy Perry, I guess they're a couple. They're a thing. After Orlando Bloom split, I kissed Trudeau and I liked it. Oh man, that's bad. Daily Mail, that is bad. It's good, but it's also bad. I kissed Trudeau and I liked it. Hey, Olive. Yeah, Justin. You'll never guess who I'm dating. Who are you dating, Justin? I'm dating Katy Perry. Who's that? You know Katy Perry. I kissed a girl and I liked it. Fireworks. I don't know who she is. Is she that blonde girl that sings country music and was dating that football player? No, Olive. Olive, you idiot. That's Taylor Swift. Katy Perry. She's the one that went up into space. Oh, yeah, the astronaut. Gotcha, Justin. You're dating her, huh? Oh, man. Justin. According to the Daily Mail, Justin even placed his hand on the pop singer's bottom during their intimate moment. This was reported on about a month ago. They were seen having a lunch or a dinner in Montreal. And now they're hanging out on her yacht. Katy Perry has a yacht. Man. We're in the wrong business. All of us are in the wrong business, man. She's got a yacht and she goes up into space. Anyway, that's the video, everybody. TheDuran.locals.com. We are on X. We are on Telegram and on Rumble. Like this video. Subscribe to this channel. And I will see everybody tomorrow. Mañana. Take care.